Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamila, Text 32. Uchor nishaditas tamste vaivasvata pura hasara keyuyam pratisedidaro Dharma Rajasya Shasanan. Uchu replied, Nishedditaha, being forbidden, Tan, to the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, Te, they, Vaivashvata Avyamaraj Purasara, the assistants or messengers. Ke who? Yuyam, all of you. Pratisedara, who are opposing. Dharma Rajasya, of the king of religious principles. Yamaraj, Shasanam, the ruling jurisdiction. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When the order carriers of Yamaraj, the son of the sun god, were thus forbidden, they replied, "Who are you, sirs, that you have the audacity to challenge the jurisdiction of Yamaraj?" Purport. According to the sinful activities of Ajamila, he was within the jurisdiction of Yamaraj, the supreme judge appointed to consider the sins of the living entities. When forbidden to touch Ajamila, the order carriers of Yamaraj were surprised because they had never been hindered in the execution of their duty by anyone within the three worlds. So text 33, Kasya vakuta ayata kasmat asya nishedata kim deva upadeva ya yuyam kim siddha sattama. Dear sirs, whose servants are you? Where have you come from? And why are you forbidding us to touch the body of Ajamila? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets? Are you sub-demigods, or are you the best of devotees? Purport, the most significant word used in this verse is siddha sattama, which means the best of the perfect. In Bhagavad Gita 7.3 it is said, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yadati siddhaye. Out of millions of persons, one may try to become siddha, perfect, or in other words, self-realized. A self-realized person knows that he is not the body, but a spirit soul, aham brahmasmi. At the present moment, practically everyone is unaware of this fact. But one who understands this has attained perfection and is therefore called siddha. When one understands that the soul is part and parcel of the supreme soul, and one thus engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Soul, one becomes siddha sattama. One is then eligible to live in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. The word siddha sattama therefore refers to a liberated pure devotee. Since the Yamadutas are servants of Yamaraj, one who is also one of the siddha sattamas, they knew that a siddha sattama is above the demigods and some sub-demigods, indeed above all living entities within this material world. The Yamadutas therefore inquired why the Vishnu Dutas were present where a sinful man was going to die. It should be noted that Ajamila was not yet dead, for the Yamadutas were trying to snatch the soul from his heart. They could not take the soul, however, and therefore Ajamila was not yet dead. This will be revealed in later verses. Ajamila was simply in an unconscious state when the argument was in progress between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. The conclusion of the argument was to be a decision regarding who would claim the soul of Ajamila. Most people in the modern world, they don't believe in sin. And indeed, sin is not so easy to define, or what is the cause of sin. In the nectar of devotion, the root cause of sin is said to be avidya, or ignorance. And what is ignorance? Ignorance is ignorance of our own being, our own spiritual nature, and our relationship with the Supreme Being, Krishna. So that's called avidya. And because of avidya, therefore we get sinful desire, which is known as the papa. And from there we get sinful activities, prarabdha and prarabdha karma. And from there we get kuta, or actually we get bija, the seed of further sinful activities, and from there we get kuta, or the tendency to commit sinful activities. And it goes around in a circle from papa to prarabdha and aprarabdha karma to bija to kuta, etc. And it's an endless cycle. And the root cause is avidya, forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. Not just we remember that I'm Krishna's servant, but actually to engage in Krishna's service. And that in itself requires a number of different factors. One is we have to know, what is Krishna's service? What does Krishna want? Now we may say, Krishna wants me to wash the dishes. I'm sure he probably does want us to wash dishes. But there are so many dishwashers, and Krishna is not necessarily satisfied because the plates are clean. To actually wash the dishes for Krishna in order to please Krishna. In other words, Krishna has no need to have clean plates. All he wants is the love and affection of the soul. And indeed, just by having if you were living in a house, the plates are clean, but no one likes each other in the house, it would be very unpleasant. Perfectly clean house and everyone's fighting with each other. It would be not a very pleasant place to live in. But if everyone likes each other and they cooperate with cleanliness, then that enhances their relationship. The relationship is what's important, and what enhances relationship, makes it more favorable, is considered to be favorable. But if the relationship is not favorable, it doesn't matter. Enhancing an unfavorable relationship will just make it more unfavorable, or hopefully turn it around to make it favorable. But still we have to look at avidya, or it's defined in other ways as, for instance, avesha, avidya, avesha, rag, dvesha, and abhiniveshita. So at first there's always that avidya, ignorance, and then there is avesha, false ego. Or as Prabhupada said, lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire false ego, by which he misidentifies himself with the mind and senses for sense gratification. In other words, when the soul has a determination and decides, because it's not that the soul is a dead stone, he has determination, he can decide. He decides that he wants to gratify the senses, to experience what that's like. Then the material nature supplies the false ego. It wouldn't be very fun to think I'm a 1/10,000th the size, tip of hair, of spirit soul, in this machine called a material body, and now I'm just imagining myself through this body, and I'm gonna engage in sense gratification, which is going to make me miserable. Now, the soul would not be very enthusiastic for very long to engage in such activities. So therefore, when he wants to engage in such activities, therefore the material nature provides a false ego by which the soul can misidentify itself with the mind and senses. So when our intelligence, our perspective in life becomes lusty, we want to which means we simply become determined to utilize our intelligence to gratify the senses, the material nature supplies the false ego to us. And then we engage in activities of sense gratification with the idea that this will make me satisfied and happy. But when the soul has pure intelligence means intelligence coming from the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and ultimately supplied by the super soul within our heart, then he doesn't misidentify himself. He knows acquiring a false ego is wrong. I'm actually the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. So instead he inquires intelligence, or Krishna gives him the intelligence to remember his relationship with Krishna's servants. In our particular case, the acharyas and their assistants. So we remember that to serve them, what their instructions are. So that's real intelligence. Krishna gives us real intelligence through our disciples' succession. And then when we utilize that, then we come in contact with Krishna. Intelligence is the next door neighbor, the spirit soul. And when the spirit soul decides to utilize his intelligence, to utilize the mind and senses in Krishna's service, then Krishna becomes pleased and reveals himself. Stane sita shutikatam tanuvang manobhira ye priyasa jita jito taishritlokyam. There's no other way of conquering Krishna, simply to remain in whatever circumstance we're under, remain in those circumstances, and at the same time, hear Siddhanta, and then apply it within our lives with our body, mind, and words. And then Krishna becomes pleased. And ordinarily he's ajita, he's unconquerable, but he becomes jita. He becomes conquered by the sincere desire of the living entity to please him. So Ajamil had forgot for many decades his relationship with Krishna. But once he remembered it, then Prabhupada said, if you light a match in a dark room, the darkness can't put out the match. The whole material creation was manifested by Krishna. His desire was to give the living entities a chance to revive their relationship with Krishna. So if someone revises their relationship with Krishna, then everything is successful in terms of Krishna's vision. Everything may have been wrong, darkness, but if you light one match, then the darkness goes away. So because he had remembered Krishna, therefore their need to be entangled in the sinful reactions of his previous life was unnecessary. Sinful activities, sinful desires, sinful material circumstances, the results of sinful material circumstances are there as long as we don't remember Krishna. But as soon as we actually remember Krishna sincerely, they go away because there's no need for them. They're only there to help us forget Krishna. But when we remember Krishna, then the material nature realizes, now we remember Krishna, there's no need for these things. In other words, it's not just a mechanical, we're not just under some mechanical laws of material nature. We are, as long as we forget Krishna. And as soon as we remember Krishna, then Krishna, the material nature, the acharyas, everything, they decide, well, there's no need for the material nature anymore, for the illusory energy. Goodbye. So it could be very simple, or if we're under the illusory energy, everything seems quite complicated. Then we have to deal with a whole set of circumstances of my false ego, what about my avesha, my raga, my attachments, my dvesha, my aversions, all in the mental platform. And then abhinivesha to my fears, my anxieties, etc., etc. So trying to take care of these things is sometimes compared to trying to blow on the boil if you have a boil and you blow on it, certainly you get some temporary relief, but not anything of any significance. Similarly, everyone in the material world is suffering. Most people don't realize they're suffering from a false ego. Sometimes they do. If you get into enough trouble, then you realize my false ego has gotten me into trouble. You're a little guy and a big guy insults you, and you get all riled up and you attack the big guy and you get beat up to pulp. You realize that my false ego didn't help me very much. So you become a little bit more tolerant the next time someone insults you. But generally people are feeding their false ego. They want their false ego to be inflated more and more. That's why they go to college and get a family and do so many things. Not that going to college or getting a family is necessarily bad, but it's bad when it's done just to inflate one's false ego. When the same thing is done to serve Krishna, then it becomes a source of liberation. But anything we do to expand our false ego becomes simply another problem for us, another entanglement. And then after that, well, because it's all due to avidya, ignorance, that by expanding my false ego, I'll get the maximum happiness. I'll imagine myself to be the enjoyer and the controller and the friend in the material nature. And after that, and sometimes people are more interested in this raga, I must fulfill my desires. So I have $1 million, but I want $1 billion. Why? Because I desire it. My desires are telling me. Or I hate this person, I'm going to kill them. Why? Because hate. I feel the hate, I must satisfy my hate. So they become servants of raga and dvesha. And the result is, whether my false ego I'm serving or raga, dvesha, abhinivesita, I become more and more absorbed in material consciousness, and the result is I'm always fearful and anxiety, wondering, fearful of what's going to happen next. I may pretend that I'm not afraid, but it's just pretension. Anyone who's not afraid, they're either crazy or stupid, or a combination of both. So here, the Yamaduta is going to drag him to hell. And if someone's saying, I don't care, send me to hell, who cares? So then the Yamadutas have to, anyone who's so foolish and stupid, the Yamadutas have to think of a better torture to really knock a little sense into this person. Because the pain is not just, the Yamadutas aren't just, and Yamaraj aren't just torturing people, because they want some practice so they can get a job with the CIA. No, they're torturing the living entity so they come to their senses. They get out of their material attachments. They're not actually torturing the soul. They're torturing the subtle body to wake the subtle body up, to realize the problem with acting sinfully. So that when the soul comes back again to the uniform of life, maybe they may take it more seriously, because in the back of their consciousness, they realize that I don't want to go to hell again and become a dog or a hog. But the material nature is, we can see, since time immemorial, people are going up and down in the 8,400,000 species of life, and they're always enthusiastic to become God, to become the enjoyer and the controller. So it's going to take some time for many living entities to realize they're wasting their time. They're not going to become happy. They're simply going to put themselves into a more and more miserable condition. And even though they may get, as Prabhupada said, if you're a sinful person, even you have all the material amenities, still you can't be happy. If you're in anxiety, you're fearful, you don't know what's going to happen next, you're afraid of your enemies, you don't know if your friends are your enemies or which of your enemies is actually your friend. If you're bewildered, then how can you enjoy anything? if you're eating a big feast and overhead is a guillotine about to fall on your head and cut it off onto the plate where you're eating, how much are you going to enjoy? Are you going to ask for another samosa before the guillotine comes down and cuts your head off? Very unlikely. You'll probably lose your appetite. So only due to ignorance, due to cultivating ignorance and intoxication, whatever else, and being bombarded with false information, do people try to enjoy in the material world. And enjoy the most insignificant things possible. To the extent that the living entity will actually pay, the souls in this age will actually pay to jump off a building, being of course attached to a rope, and feel the fun of almost falling to your death. And that they consider it entertainment. And they'll actually pay for it. They'll pay to have their body marked up with pins stuck into it. What to speak, we've seen ladies, especially maybe men now also, with pearls stuck through their tongue. And they pay for it. It costs money. And this is their happiness. They stick out their tongue. Look how beautiful my tongue is. They'll torture themselves for the most insignificant things and think they're making progress. But the real progress is waking up to our spiritual identity and working as a spirit soul so we become in contact with Krishna and get the real happiness in life, which happens to be Krishna and everything and everyone related to Krishna. And without that connection with Krishna, it is called Shrama Evahi Kevalam. At best, it's simply a waste of time. At worst, it's a very unpleasant circumstance and situation. So Ajamil, he was about to be yanked out of his body. He saw these persons, not someone you want to see on your Facebook page, coming for him, wanting to drag him. And obviously their intentions weren't taking him on a vacation. They were going to take him to a very fearful place. But he got free. So that was enough to shock him into becoming sincerely engaged in pure devotional service, especially after he saw the Vishnu Dutas, he realized that that's the way to go. So the question is, what it's going to take us to become serious about Krishna consciousness? Luckily, because we're engaged in Krishna service, Krishna has arranged our personal lives in such a way to give us enough misery and problems to try to wake us up. Because we take it that sometimes, that why is Krishna so unkind? I'm such a nice devotee. I'm doing so nicely. I'm trying so hard. Why is he punishing me? There must be something wrong with the process. So the example is given that a man has his wife and he wants to enjoy with his wife, so he's shaking the wife to wake up. So Krishna is shaking us to wake us up. And we're taking it, leave me alone, let me sleep. I was enjoying my dream and you came along and started to shake me. So we should understand when we're experiencing some difficulty, Krishna is just shaking us so we can wake up to a much greater happiness than our dreamlike state. And if we're enjoying some nice situation, we should realize it's all by Krishna's mercy. And we should utilize it more to engage more enthusiastically in spreading the Sankirtan movement and engaging ourselves in pure devotional service. That way we'll become steady in our Krishna consciousness and not be disturbed by so-called happiness and distress of the material existence. Then even at the time of death, one can actually remain equally poised in Krishna consciousness. Only if one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, remembering, actually absorbed in one's living practically in the spiritual world, in one's spiritual consciousness, and one's spiritual identity, can one remain undisturbed at the time of death. In any case, we're practicing for that. And as we become more advanced, then we'll actually start remembering Krishna's forms and his pastimes, his qualities and his associates. That will become Internally, we'll be able to remember these pastimes just like watching a movie. And externally, we'll see that there's nothing but Krishna's pastimes going outside also. And therefore, there won't be any more fear that we're living in Slovenia or that, you know, the Illuminati is going to come and get us. All these fears will go away because we'll see that there's nothing but Krishna, and Krishna is arranging everything for everyone's purification, even for the Illuminati's purification. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
What if, when Krishna wants to wake up, and you don't know what are you supposed to learn or what are you supposed to?
So, when Krishna shakes you, and you don't know what are you supposed to do now or learn or why is he doing that? What can you do?
Chant Hare Krishna. That's what he's trying to teach us. Obviously, we're bewildered, so he wants us to chant Hare Krishna, and then we'll remember what he wants us to do. And if we're going through some difficulty in chanting Hare Krishna, then we'll chant even better. And we'll think, oh, how nice. Such a great opportunity. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.